Right. Well, just taking a look at what little data there was out in the US last week, much of it's sort of feeding a little bit of a market frenzy now that maybe we're getting to the top of the interest rate hikes by the Federal Reserve. And what they were looking for, in much obviously, was some indications of softness in US economic activity, and particularly in the labour market. And I say, there wasn't a lot of data last week, but the two that really caught people's attention, I think, were the ISM non-manufacturing, or the services sector, Purchasing Managers Index. That one came back a little bit more than expected, down to 50.3 from 51.9. Now, the whole story of this cycle in the United States has been that, you know, normally we get the goods sector and the services sector turning down, not quite together, but very close together. In this cycle, we've had the goods sector turning down, and we've had ISM readings which have been down into the 40s for quite some time. That normally is the canary in the coal mine. You know, it tells us that we've got much weaker economic growth coming. But we've had services holding up very, very well. And we've had the services sector, ISM in the US, in expansionary territory above 50. It's still in expansionary territory, but it's getting mighty close to it now. So it came back to 50.3. So it seems as if that last bit of strength in terms of demand in the US economy may just be starting to get to that breaking point. We also had initial jobless claims, weekly initial jobless claims. And they jumped a little bit more than expected. They went up from 233,000 for the most recent week to 261,000. It's been quite a while since we've had a reading up in the 260s. That's still not a particularly weak reading, but it takes us back two or three years since we last saw a reading up in that sort of level, and suggests that we might just have the hint of some softness running into the labour market, which is something that the Federal Reserve is watching very, very carefully. Now, running into this week, we do have the Fed meeting, and the Fed meeting comes up on Wednesday. It's not the only central bankers meeting. We've got the ECB meeting this week on Thursday as well. They're probably going to do different things. And so we've got the Fed meeting on Wednesday. And at this point, the market has now come to thinking, yeah, maybe they're going to pause. They're looking for the funds rate to be unchanged at 5.25%. Running into that, before that Fed meeting, we've got some important data. We've got both the May CPI coming out on Tuesday and the May Producer Price Index for the US coming out on Wednesday, and that's all ahead of the FOMC meeting. Now, there's quite a bit of excitement around the May CPI because there's an expectation that the annual rate of inflation is going to come down from 4.9% to 4.1%. That will be on a 0.2% increase in the CPI. That's largely, yeah, energy prices have been rather softer, and that's bearing down on some of the inflation pressure. You've still got it running through the services sector. You've still got it running through housing. But you've got some of the goods price stability, even deflation, plus also the pullback that's been running through energy prices just to offset that. So that annual rate would come down to 4.1%. The core CPI is expected to come down as well. It's expected to be a higher rise, 0.4% month on month, but that would bring the annual rate down to 5.3 from 5.5. The important point about this is it's a strange thing in terms of trying to gauge exactly what the Fed does next. Yes, inflation's coming down. There's still some parts of inflation which are still sticky. The other point is the inflation rate's now diving below all the measures of wage increase in the United States. So in other words, we've got real wage growth running in the United States. Now, that may slow the reduction in demand. So the reduction in demand we're seeing in the United States, that might actually turn back up again because you've actually got some income growth. So we've still got a pretty tricky outlook that runs off back of all this. But at this stage, if the CPI does what the market expects, and on Wednesday if the PPI is pretty well behaved as well, what they're looking for on the producer price index is the headline to actually come down 0.1%. That will bring the annual rate of producer price in inflation down to 1.5% year on year from 2.3%. So, you know, that's actually quite low. So, you know, pretty good chance that the Fed is going to sort of hold with that, that meeting that comes up on Wednesday. We do have a little bit of data that comes out after the Fed, but in some senses, you know, it's not going to be, won't be important for this decision, but it may be important for whether the Fed stays on hold as we go a bit further forward. So later on, we've got May retail sales on Thursday. That's expected to be soft, and the market's looking for that to be down about 0.1% after being up 0.4%. Core retail sales are expected to be up only 0.1%. We also get some of the June state surveys, the purchasing managers surveys for New York State and Philadelphia area. And for the Empire State survey, it was at minus 31.8 going back the month before, expected to be around about minus 16, so still a pretty soft reading. And the Philly Fed survey is expected to deteriorate a bit from minus 10.4 to minus 13.5. So these indicators coming in rather softer. You've got paradox in the United States in financial markets. As always tends to happen when you sense a top in the interest rate structure, you do tend to get a blow-off rally in risk assets and things like equities. It doesn't persist because beyond the blow-off rally, the reason that you're getting to the top at all is because there's weaker growth ahead. And so that then tends to come into play at some point in the future. Bond market's already, already at that point. They've got an inverse yield curve. They've got the short-dated yields up in the fives. For the the 1 and 2 year area, and very high threes for the longer dated yields. You've got an inverse yield curve there already, the bond market, and has been for quite some time, factoring in much weaker growth ahead. So you've just got that bit of a mix between the two markets, which does resolve in time if we end up with softer growth persisting. Moving to And the data we're getting out of China is we still got some strength running through the services sector PMI over there. This is the rebound after all the lockdowns. We had the May cakes in services PMI. That's the private sector version of the PMI. And it was actually a very strong read, up at 57.1 from 56.4. But we had some trade data too, and the trade data has started to turn softer again for China in terms of the export side. If you go back to April, exports were up 8.5% year on year. They were still expected to be up for the most recent monthly reading, but they actually fell on a year-on-year basis, now down 7.5% year-on-year. So one of the engines for Chinese growth, which is international trade, just looks as if it's running softer. We had the May CPI and producer price index too. And when you think about it, the Chinese economy is the one economy in the world which, because of the lockdowns and because of the attacks by the government on certain sectors of the economy going back a year ago, has got a lot of excess capacity. But unsurprisingly, the inflation rate in China is very, very low now by comparison with most other countries. And the CPI for the month of May was down 0.2% month on month. That left the annual inflation rate at 0.2% year on year. It was 0.1% year on year the month before. Yeah, obviously these are very, very low inflation rates. Producer price inflation came out too, and that is now minus 4.6% year on year from minus 3.6% year on year. So you've got really soft price indicators running through China. It certainly gives China flexibility to change interest rates, ease monetary policy. At this stage, the weaker data in China, or weaker than expected data in China, is not enough yet to force the hand of the authorities to think about taking some spending action, as they have often done in the past, to try and boost economic activity. And we'll see some of the consequences of that holding back on policy and some of the other data points that come out for China this week. This week in China, you know, we've got fixed asset investment spending coming out. Normally, this is a leader of economic growth in China when it's turning up, because you're getting the spending coming through from Beijing, the instructions to the local communist parties to start spending on infrastructure. It's not happening this time. And so fixed asset investment spending for May, if anything, is going to come back a bit, we think, to 4.4% year-on-year from 4.7% year-on-year. That'll also show in industrial production, probably going to come back to about 4.1% year-on-year from 5.6. And the initial surge we got in retail sales for the lifting of restrictions, and there were pretty draconian restrictions that were lifted, you know, allowing people out to spend, you know, going back to the month of April, we had retail sales up 18.4% year-on-year. That's expected to moderate to 13.9% year-on-year and will continue to moderate, we think, as we go out over the course of the next few months. Turning to Australia last week, and we had, you know, the key indicator, the key events of the week, really, there were several. One was the RBA meeting, where, you know, they've now done back-to-back rate hikes after the pause back a couple of months ago. They decided to lift the cash rate another 25 basis points to 4.1%. We had a major speech by the RBA governor last week too, where he outlined, you know, what's really worrying him, and what's really worrying him are unit labour costs. And unit labour costs, in this speech, he showed a chart where unit labour costs have a very strong correlation to inflation over time. And unit labour costs are running at 7.5% year-on-year in his speech. We then got the Q1 GDP read that came out on the Wednesday, and I'm not sure whether the Reserve Bank governor would have had a chance to see that before. If anything, unit labour costs went up even more, because part of the problem was that, you know, productivity forms part of unit labour costs. It's a combination of wages and productivity. And the productivity part, which has been shot for quite some time, actually got worse in the Q1 GDP report. GDP per hour worked fell another 0.3% quarter on quarter. That's enough. That took the year-on-year change, the annual change, down to minus 4.6% year-on-year productivity change. Yeah, that's the worst on record for Australia. So productivity totally shot. The good news is there was a whopping great fall in productivity going back to the second quarter last year, 3% in just one quarter. Yeah, it was all to do with the pandemic and what the pandemic does in terms of you've got labour hoarding at a time when you haven't got much output growth. So we will get some improvement in productivity change when we see the Q2 figures. It may bring the unit labour costs back from the 7.5% that was genuinely worrying the Reserve Bank governor to nearer to 6. But we'd need to see some pretty weak growth to keep that to keep that run going. So what we got in terms of GDP, well, you know, it wasn't a strong GDP report. You know, we had 0.2% growth in GDP for the most recent quarter. That brought the annual rate growth down to 2.3% year-on-year from 2.6%. Looking into Q2, you know, most of the contributors, the early contributors we're looking at, are looking around flat to even weaker. So, yeah, there's an outside chance that you could have a negative sign on the quarterly GDP rate for the second quarter when it comes out in early September. But, you know, it's a way away before we see that number. So we're looking to all the contributors that might come in before that in terms of what it means for Australian growth. And that moves us into what's coming through this week. So today we'll get the MAB Business Conditions and Business Confidence Survey. Business conditions have been pretty strong on that survey. Plus 14 was the reading going back to April. Hopefully it comes back to about plus 10. That will still be a strong result. Business confidence has started to deteriorate, so it was minus 1 going back April. If that goes deeper into the minus territory, yeah, that probably helps the Reserve Bank a little bit. We've got June Westpac consumer sentiment coming out tomorrow. That was down 7.9% last month, but yeah, that came just after the most recent Reserve Bank rate hike. Maybe that, you know, won't be quite as negative for the month of June. Wait and see. The June result will also reflect what people thought of the budget. And on Thursday, we've got Labour Force data. Now, this is a key one. You know, going back last month, we had a quirky fall in employment. It was down by 4,300. Now, we're expecting some sort of bounce on that. Market's looking for about plus 15,000. If it's weaker than that, then that's helpful as far as the Reserve Bank's concerned. You know, if it's running much above 20,000, you know, that's not so helpful. And so, you know, watching to see exactly where that comes in. We're expecting the participation rate to be steady at 66.7. And the unemployment rate probably to stay at around about 3.7%. You know, the Reserve Bank's watching all this very carefully whilst it's agonising about some, say, unit labour costs and how sticky inflation's becoming. So watching all this, I think we're going to get quite a downturn in some of these economic numbers over the next few months. So that may limit the Reserve Bank to one and at most only two more rate hikes. I think they are in the business of hiking rates a bit further, but I'm not at the extreme end where some people are now calling the cash rate all the way up to 4.85%. I think that's highly unlikely, given that we'll get plenty of evidence of weakening starting to come through in Australia over the course of the next few months. Moving to Europe. Europe now is technically in recession. We got the revisions to their Q1 GDP. And it was minus 0.1% quarter on quarter. It was minus 0.1% on revision the quarter before. So they've had back-to-back quarterly fall. They're not big, you know, so it's just very, very small, minor recession at this point. But the key point about this is that they've still got pretty high inflation. And it's coming down through the sevens into the sixes, but still uncomfortably high, and with, you know, exactly the same problem we got here. You've got unit labour costs rising very fast. So this week, you know, the key event in Europe is the ECB meeting, and they're not quite in the position of the Fed. You know, they've still got too much inflation pressure, and it's likely that they will actually hike their deposit rate. And the deposit rate, which currently sits at 3.25%, they lifted it at their last meeting by 25 basis points. Looks like they're going to be doing another 25 basis points to 3.5. So going to be a pretty interesting week, you know, in the US market's getting a bit excited that, you know, the Fed might be getting to a pause, maybe even getting to the top of its rate structure. But elsewhere, we're not quite at that point yet. And certainly not in Europe, and here in Australia, the concerns are all around unit labour costs, lack of productivity with too much wages growth, and so, you know, that's the sort of pressure point that's running through here.